I'm Apollo 16 astronaut Charlie Duke, the 10th man to walk on the moon. And you got a bunch of guys about to turn blue. This is the Space Show, Australia, on 88.3 Southern FM.
And joining us again now is Peter Arwood from the Space Association of Australia. Now, Peter, what's the significance of that, the bunch of guys about to turn blue?
The bunch of guys about to turn blue, actually, Charlie Duke was the CAPCOM, the capsule communicator, the person that spoke, was the only person that spoke from Earth to the Apollo 11 crew during their descent to the lunar landing on Apollo 11 in 1969. And when they finally touched down, after a lot of dramas with fuel and computer problems and a whole lot of stressful situations, they finally got there, and Neil Armstrong said, "We've landed. Tranquility Base here, the Eagles landed." And then Charlie Duke said something to the effect of, "You got a bunch of guys about to turn blue, and we're breathing again, thanks a lot." So I think probably a lot of people have heard that, and perhaps they didn't know the voice behind it. So it's Charlie Duke, yeah.
And Peter, do you remember the words that Neil Armstrong said when he first stepped on the moon?
I do. That's one small step for a man and one giant leap for mankind.
Okay, except he didn't say
A. I think he did say A, but we'll talk about that later.
No, we won't argue about
He's
that.
He's from
now.
Ohio.
Anyway, yeah. We're talking about Charlie Duke and Apollo 16. Now, here is what the theme music that was used. In fact, we're not quite ready for it. We'll have it shortly. The theme music that was used to introduce the Apollo 16 coverage by NBC Television. But Peter, first tell us a bit more about Apollo 16.
Okay, Apollo 16 took place in April of 1972, quite a long time ago now. The two spacecraft, as people may or may not be aware, there's two spacecrafts involved in the Apollo mission once they get into space. There's the command and service module, which is called CASPER, and then when they separate, there's a landing module, which is called the lunar module, and they named that Orion. So the crew on this mission were the commander, John Young, the command module pilot, Ken Mattingly, and the lunar module pilot, who was Charlie Duke. Now, the lunar module pilot is a bit of a misnomer because Charlie didn't actually pilot the lunar module, but he was on there, and I would have swapped my seat for that myself. They landed in the Descartes region in the lunar highlands, and the total duration of the mission was 11 days and 2 hours. They actually had 3 days and 3 extended moonwalks, EVAs, extravehicular activities on the moon, and they also brought along a car, which was the second time that they'd done that on these Apollo missions, and they drove around, took samples, took lots of photographs, and set up experiments, and on the way back, the command module pilot, who was in fact Ken Mattingly, and people who may have seen the Apollo 13 movie might know that name. Ken Mattingly was the one that got bumped off the mission of Apollo 13 just a couple of days before due to takeoff, because it was thought that Charlie Duke, who was the backup, had been exposed to measles. So he was very disappointed and got bumped off, but he actually turned out pretty well for him, because he got back in the rotation, got back and actually flew on Apollo 16 and got the opportunity to do a deep spacewalk. That's a spacewalk between the Earth and the Moon. And that was not planned to be happening on the Apollo 13, so I think he did pretty well over that. But all in all, it was a very successful mission. And Charlie was here in Australia back in September, and he joined us, and we were very, very fortunate to be able to have him in the studio here and have a good extended chat with him.
And we'll have that in a few minutes. But first, let's go back to 1972. Thank you. And this is the theme music used by NBC Television in the United States to open their Apollo 16 coverage. By that time, of course, the networks weren't covering the missions as well as they had in the earlier ones, but still, they did give it some attention.
ABC News, the flight of Apollo 16. Brought to you by the Gulf Oil Corporation. Producers of more and better energy.
Well, out of the archive there. Well, the launch, as Peter just said, happened in 1972, April the 16th. And on that date, three astronauts sat atop a 111-meter-tall Saturn V. And here is how NASA called that countdown.
T-minus 25, 24, 23, 22, 21, 20, 19, 18, 17, guidance release, 15, 14, 13, 14, 13, 19, 19, 19, 19, 19, 19, 19,
19, 19, 19, 19, 19, 19, 19, 19, 19,
19, 19, 19, 19, 19, 19, 19, 19,
Oh, you have good thrust in all five.
Roger.
Pitch and roll program started.
Roger.
16 now maneuvering to its proper flight path attitude. Mark 27 seconds.
Apollo 16 now capable of water landing. Mark 1 minute 12 seconds coming up on period of maximum aerodynamic pressure on the vehicle.
Now, Apollo 16 got into Earth orbit and then it spent 2 hours and 22 minutes going around the Earth. And it circled the Earth 1 2/3 times before they blasted out towards the Moon. Now, for John Young, who had made 3 previous space flights, the view of the Earth was not a novelty. But this was Duke's first look at the Earth from space, and he was suitably impressed.
Very nice picture, Charlie. We can see southwestern United States, lower California. Very nice.
Good. Kent's doing all that good work for you. It's out his window. Gordy, is that color okay for you?
Very nice, Ken. Beautiful color.
I bet it's good, but you just can't believe how beautiful it is. The reds in the desert down there and southern United States and northern part of Mexico. And from here you see the Great Lakes and the state of Florida out there, and it's just absolutely something. We're going to go back to work, but thought you'd enjoy that.
Thank you for the picture. It's the next best thing to being up there.
Now, Peter, tell us a little bit about the target site that they were heading towards on the moon.
Okay, but the landing site was actually 9 degrees south and 15.52 degrees east, so very, very close to the lunar equator. The Descartes landing site is a grooved, hilly region which appears to have undergone some modification by volcanic processes during its formation. The Descartes region is in the southwest quadrant of the visible face of the Moon in the lunar highlands. There are several young, bright rayed craters created by impacts in the volcanic terrain. The Descartes site has 2 separate volcanic features, the Kale Plains, smooth to undulating, and the Descartes Mountains, part of the Kent Plateau, hilly, furrowed highlands. So quite an interesting site, quite spectacular.
Well, let's go into some of our interview with Charlie. And in this, we're going to talk about how he learned he was on Apollo 16, some changes to the schedule, about that little car. By the way, Peter, there's no air on the moon, so how did they run the car?
They had a battery-operated car, yes.
Oh, electric
car. That's it.
Okay.
The electric car, yes. They were way ahead of their time. And a fascinating car that was built by Boeing. They scrambled together in a pretty short amount of time, and it worked very, very well.
Okay, here's Charlie Duke. Now, after 11, there was 12 which landed, 13 which didn't make it, 14, 15, mm-hmm. and you were on 16.
That's correct, yeah.
And at what time during that process did you learn that you were on that mission?
Well, right after Apollo 11, and we had a pilot's meeting. It was sometime early August, and Deke Slayton announced the next cruise after Apollo let's see, I think Apollo 13 was already training, but they didn't have a backup. In some way, I don't remember exactly how it occurred, but in August of 69, I found out I was going to be on backup crew for Apollo 13, and I was to be the lunar module pilot, so I was going to back up Fred Hayes. And the rotation we had back then, if you were back up on 13, you would fly on 16. If you were back up on 14, you would fly 17. And so, and I knew that if I did my job and learned the systems and didn't foul up, I was going to land on the moon on Apollo 16 if the schedule continued, and if there was a lot of ifs, but at least I'd have a chance. And so that's what happened. And right after Apollo 13 flew and we recovered them safely, the crews were announced that we would be training for Apollo 16. And eventually our landing was scheduled for sometime in 1971, but they kept extending the program. They said, well, we want a J mission, which meant a long duration lunar module. We want to get a rover, a car on board. And so all of that stretched out the schedule. And John and I ended up training for 2 years. We originally were going to be the first flight with a car, the rover. But then they canceled some of the last two or three missions on Apollo, and they moved the car up one, Apollo 15. So Dave Scott and Jim Irwin got to ride it first. But John and I were in the major development of it. We followed the from the very beginning, thinking we were going to be the prime first users. Second was okay.
We often see pictures of John Young test driving the rover on the moon. And I've always thought that was a bit of a silly thing to do before you'd done the traverses, the three traverses you did. Because if you'd wrecked the thing then, you would have been...
Well, it turned out it was we call that the Grand Prix. And that was part of an actual test of the lunar module, the lunar rover, that we had scheduled. It wasn't just an off the cuff, you know, hey, let's do this, John. Now it was all written into the flight plan, exactly what he would do, and it was actually after the first EVA. I mean, not after the first EVA, but we'd already done a geology out to Plum Crater, and we're coming back, and it was the end of our first EVA when we had this schedule. And so I got off and I got the camera, the movie camera, and I said, okay, John, let's do the Grand Prix. And so he starts driving off, and I remember he drove towards the lunar module, and I said, okay, give me a sharp turn left, and which was part of the flight plan. And he said, I don't want to do a sharp turn. I said, come on, John, give me one. Okay, here's a sharpie, he said. He did a 180 degrees, and the thing's bouncing like crazy. He's probably going, doesn't sound like it's fast, but on the moon it was fast, like 6-7 kilometers an hour. And it was bouncing, and you can see that in the movie that I took. So it was scheduled, and I don't think we ever had an opportunity to wreck it, but, you know, something could have happened to the steering and something like that, and then we'd have been down to one system, and that would have taken away our some of our mobility, if you will, on the subsequent EVAs.
Because you had contingencies to walk if the rover didn't work.
Yeah, we had an EVA, walking EVA, that was on the maps if the car broke down or didn't work as we started out. And we also had a one-man EVA plan. If somebody's suit failed the check, he would stay in the lunar module, and only one person would go out. And we had that all worked out, but fortunately nobody ever had to do it. There were a lot of planning went into all these contingencies and, you know, what if this, what if that.
And at what point during the descent and landing did you think, we've got it done?
I felt like it was an altitude, probably about 2,000 meters. The vehicle, you're looking out towards space, and you can't see the moon, but your radar altimeter and all your computer's giving you altitude. And at about 2,000 meters, it pitches down, and you can see the moon for the first time. And we were right on target. I recognized two big craters that were in our landing site. And I said, we got it made. At that point, I said, we got it made, John. And we started maneuvering, and I was monitoring the systems. John was taking over and flying the vehicle, and I was basically talking him down, you know, giving him altitude, giving him rate of descent, giving him lateral velocity, forward velocity, so that by about, I don't know, 60, 80 feet, he'd picked out a landing spot, and I'm talking him down slowly, and occasionally looking out my side, make sure there's no rock or a crater that one of the legs could land in on my side that he couldn't see. And, man, we touched down, and engine stopped, and we were dead level. I mean, it was a perfect landing spot.
And when you look at the pictures of the lunar module, it's sometimes hard to visualize just how big this thing was. It's a proper big spaceship. It was made in two parts. There was the descent stage and the ascent stage. Now, the descent stage was 3.2 meters high and 4.3 meters in diameter. It had four landing legs, and fueled up before it actually did the descent to the moon, it had a mass of 8.8 tons. The ascent stage had a pressurized habitable volume of 4.5 cubic meters. The actual cabin volume was 6.7 cubic meters, and the ascent stage stood 3.8 meters high, had a 4.3 meter diameter, and carried 2.4 tons of fuel. That meant if you add those two together, the total mass fueled was 16.4 tons, and it stood 7 meters high and had a width of 9.5 meters. Well, here's how the descent went.
A 64 at 8200. Pro.
Pitch over.
Pitch over. And here he is, Gators, Lone Star.
Right on. Oh, I'm in the tank, Charlie.
Okay, 40 degrees, 38 degrees.
Right.
Down on dock, north ray. Looks like we're going to be able to make it, John. There's not too many blocks up there.
Ryan, you go
okay,
for landing.
Okay, 4,000 feet.
Go for landing.
42 LPD.
42.
Okay, 3,900 feet.
Okay, two to the south, Charlie.
Okay. It's in. Okay, 42, 41 LPD, 30,000 feet on profile.
Okay, there's, we're coming right down, gonna be a little past,
Okay, 41 LPD.
Okay,
30,000 feet, 60 on profile.
Okay.
Okay, 42 LPD, couple of more in, 1,400 feet, 44 down, looking good. Okay, out of 1,000 feet, right on profile. 54 LPD, dropping out the bottom now, 800 feet, 30 down.
Hey, Houston, we're going to be just a little long.
Roger.
But we're just now beam double spot.
Copy.
Okay, 23, 22 down at 500 feet. Big blocks over here to the left, guys. Okay, 300 feet, 15 down.
Okay. Take over, Charlie.
Okay. Okay, fuel is good, 10%. That comes a shadow. Okay, 200 feet, 11 down. Okay, 5 down at 130 feet. 2 forward. Omaha, Richard. Okay, looking good. Perfect place over here, John. A couple of big boulders. Not too bad. Okay, 80 feet, down at 3, looking super. There's dust. Okay, down at 3, 50 feet, down at 4. Give me one quick up. You're backing up slightly. Okay, 2 down, stand by for contact. I'm gonna let her down. You level off, better on down. Okay, 76%, plenty fast. Contact, stop, boom, throw, engine arm.
Go after Omni, Orion.
Double spot, we're about
Okay, you got it.
Okay, we're forward to the north, forward and to the north of double spot, I would guess about 200 meters to the north and maybe 150 meters.
So having made that landing, John Young and Charlie Duke then went on to describe their view of Descartes from the lunar module. And here they're talking with astronaut Jim Irwin, who is capsule communicator in Houston Mission Control. Now, Irwin had walked on the moon 9 months earlier as the lunar module pilot of Apollo 15.
Hey, it sure ain't flat, John.
Wow.
There's that ridge to the north.
Yep, sure is.
All we got to do is jump out the hatch, and we got plenty of rocks.
Houston, boy, it sure looks like you can make, Crown Crater from here. I can see Ray Crater from here. Charlie's got nothing but a ridge to look at.
That sounds beautiful, John. Wish I were there.
There's a ridge out in front of us, too, John.
Yeah, there's a ridge in front of us, one to the side of us, and my guess is that we're in a subdued old crater that's got a lot more craters.
Ready, we copy.
What a neat place.
Hey, Jim, this ridge in front of us does look like a subdued crater, and it maybe is a raised rim about 50 meters in front of us, about 4 or 5 meters tall. About 30 or 40% of the surface is covered with boulders that are maybe a half a meter in size. On out in front of us and to the right, where we landed, there were...
Hey, man, Charlie, we got to stay, Houston. The way these blocks are laid in here out my window, I guess they come from South Ray. There's some biggies out there. We've got right out in front of us about 100 meters at my 10-30 position. I've got one that must be 3 meters across.
Ryan, you're safe for T1.
Hey, Jim, that's often a case of beer to Fido. I'll tell you, that targeting was just beautiful. Boy, you guys just started us right in there. That was superb.
Very good.
Where it says we are, I believe it. Boy, it's really a nice place. Feel that 16G, Charlie.
My restraint harness has got me anchored.
Oh, that's what the trouble is.
It's about level. We're not going to have a bit of trouble getting it.
No, it's going to be neat. But it sure is not, smooth, it's not that FS smooth, you see. It's not that FS smooth. We're in the middle of a block field.
Roger.
There's a Crown Crater up there. But they're little blocks.
And, Jim, we got Crown Crater out John's left window about 9 o'clock.
And just looking at it from here, I don't think the rover's going to have any trouble going up that hill.
Glad to hear that.
Could be wrong. Slopes tend to fool you.
It looked good going north right, too. There was some big blocks on the rim, but not the track just looked good.
Looked good, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like we're right on top of the ground.
Yeah, we didn't. We dropped very far.
Yeah, we got a lot of rocks. That's for sure.
I wish I could tell you what kind of rocks those are, Houston, but some of them are very white. Doggone if I could see. I'm not close enough to them, but I see one white one with some black. Can't tell whether that's dirt or not on it. But it could be a white breccia.
We copy.
Every one of them are angular, too, Jeff. Yeah, they're all angular. They're out of South Ray, I believe.
They were the two astronauts, John Young and Charlie Duke, speaking from within the lunar module just a few minutes after landing, describing the scene. Now, short time after that, they got out. Now, Peter, do you remember the first words spoken by John Young when he stepped out on the moon?
No way. No recollection of that, unfortunately.
No, and nor did I. So I had to look this up. But this is what he actually said. They were John Young's first words as he stepped out onto the lunar surface. Now, this is a reference to the Joel Chandler Harris story, How Mr. Rabbit Was Too Sharp for Mr. Fox. In the story, Brer Rabbit has become entangled with the tar baby and is caught by Brer Fox. Brer Fox thinks he might roast Brer Rabbit, who says, I don't care what you can do with me, Brer Fox, just so you don't fling me in that briar patch. Well, now on his fourth spaceflight, John Young thinks that NASA has finally thrown him in the briar patch. Now, Peter, do you remember what Charlie Duke said when he made his first step on the moon?
No, I do not, Andrew. That would be a good one for a trivia contest.
It would, and it would have caught me because I didn't know, but I looked it up, and here's what he said. Not as famous, is it, Peter?
Not quite, but you can see, you can sense the excitement in his voice.
Yes, it doesn't matter who's been there before you. If you're all the first, it's your first time, it's pretty exciting.
I can imagine.
Okay, well, back to our conversation, which was pretty exciting for us, with Charlie Duke, the 10th man to walk on the moon.
And then I got the shock of my life. Well, not quite, but a real shock. Later on, when we first EVA, Apollo experiments package was on the back side of the lunar module in the third quadrant on the back. And so it was my job to get it off, get the RTG, the power source off, which was also back there. And I walked back there and I said, look at this, John. And we had missed a big crater by like 6 feet. Wow. And 2 meters. And if we'd have landed 6 feet back, we'd have been... We wouldn't have turned over, but it would have been a very awkward attitude to work around. Mm. It might have even put the experiments package out of my reach because I'd have been down in this hole. And we hadn't even seen it. It was a shallow enough crater that it didn't have any shadows, but not so deep that you could see it.
Yes, because you landed in the lunar morning and the sun angle was quite critical.
It was, because we wanted those shadows. We wanted to see the edge of the craters. We wanted to see the blocks. We wanted to see the slope of the terrain. If the slope, if the surface was tilted toward you, it was bright gray. If it was tilted away from you, it was dark gray. And so we use that to give us a sort of a sense of level, if you will. We pick something that's sort of in between the dark and the light that was going to be good. And John did a great job.
You returned to Earth safely and then worked, you mentioned you worked on the shuttle for a while.
Next I went to backup crew on Apollo 17, yes. Which was a surprise. They had a backup crew on 17, but they got removed for some problems. And so John Young and Stu Rooster and I became backup crew for Apollo 17 in like late June of 1972. And so we trained till the end of Apollo. As backup. And after Apollo was over, then I went to work for Space Shuttle. First in the astronaut office, monitoring crew station design, airlock, working on the crew cockpit layout, airlock, and also a little bit with Bruce McCandless on the manned maneuvering unit. Then I went on into more of a management job, working as a technical assistant to the manager of the shuttle program, and then I went into shuttle operations. NASA wanted me to move to take a job in Washington as a deputy administrator for legislative affairs, but. My kids didn't want to go. Dottie didn't want to go, and it was, and we'd had such a tough time with our marriage. It was going to be just a big problem moving to Washington. Mm-hmm. So I turned it down, and ended up. Then I ended up in shuttle operations when I decided to retire due to an opportunity I was presented in business.
You decided not to stay on for the shuttle flights and do that, whereas some of the other Apollo astronauts did.
Yeah, both guys I was on that went to the moon with did. T.K. Mattingly flew, I think, the third shuttle flight. John Young was the first. And then a lot of my group stayed on, and they flew shuttles. But I decided to leave. Looking back, I've had a few regrets. I sometimes wish I'd have stayed around for a couple of years with Space Shuttle and flown at least one of the test flights, or and I could have done that, but I didn't. And so that was one of the regrets, I guess, partial regret, let me put it that way, that that I had, that I didn't stay for another six or seven years.
And we're talking there to Charlie Duke, and we have more about Charlie Duke on next week's The Space Show.
Online all the time, 88.3 Southern FM.